The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Good morning from chilly Edmond, Oklahoma. This is Andrew Locher filling in today for Mr. Stephen Fleury. He's currently in Ireland preparing for this weekend's public appearance campaign. This is already his second campaign of the year. He's carrying on with the urgent message that he carried out last year as he spoke in Britain and Europe, as well as the United States. And the message is pretty plain at those campaign lectures that we need to act on what we're studying. He's also been busy taping new programs, as he's talked about on his program for the CBS stations over there in the United Kingdom. Those programs are responsible for adding more new Trumpet subscribers than any other means of advertising that we use. We're looking to tighten up our budget a little bit. We might reduce some of that coverage in the United Kingdom. But again, as we see that response coming in, obviously it varies from station to station, but it's really hard to scale back. And so I tend to think that we will probably keep everything going just as strong as we can. Next week, I'm sure we'll hear some exciting reports from him. The recordings that we get to hear after the lectures, where the subscribers meet with him, meet with our staff. They're going to have this campaign in Belfast, and there's already exciting and very fruitful prospects that will be attending those lectures. The campaigns over the past year have proven to be really beneficial, and more people are attending services with us. Mr. John McDonald in Canada continues to invite new brethren from the campaigns that were held up in Canada. I think we had three or four of them last year, and he's advocating for more in this coming year. Canada has been really active for us. It just seems that the strength of the church up there is really growing. And so that's exciting to see. But we see that all over the world, really. And perhaps it's because of the more aggressive campaigns that we're doing. Our field ministers are out there eager to talk to those that are interested. And I think the fruits are really outstanding to see. Well, yesterday, Richard Palmer spoke about a new article he's working on for the coming Trumpet. And he gave us a few details about that. I didn't check this morning to see if it was posted yet. But he talked about comparing events from the 1930s and how there's some similarity to what we see going on in the world around us today. It is kind of shocking how detailed history can be as it tends to repeat itself. The subject I'll get into toward the end of the program today ties into that general time period just a little bit after, and it all coincides with the rise of God's end time Elijah. Mr. Palmer is just such a great source of geopolitical and biblical knowledge. It's a treat to have him host the program. He's very up-to-date on British politics, European politics. He understands how things work in Germany, the different political and again, biblical significance of what goes on. He's a teacher at the college. He teaches international relations. I have a daughter in his class, and she just loves that class. I think we'd all like to enroll in Richard Palmer's international relations class. It's a program that's been developed over the years. But again, we have some really brilliant minds helping to explain what's going on in the world around us. And speaking of the college, it's about that time of year that the deans, Mr. Wayne Turgeon and Mr. Stephen Fleury, when they work with the chancellor on next year's enrollment, Mr. Turgeon is busy with this right now, trying to solicit feedback and direction, or not necessarily direction, but just our thoughts from the faculty, from the supervisors at work. And it is a busy time. You might keep them in mind, as those are very difficult decisions to make. Again, the deans and the chancellor work to shape the college, work to shape this work in many ways. We're also in the initial stages of planning for campaigns for Mr. Gerald Fleury. It looks likely that we'll go to Seattle and Fresno probably in the next month or so. We'll know more details as we get into next week. It's been just short of a year since he was out on the campaign trail, and he's anxious to get back at it. And we intend to have several campaigns spread out throughout the year for Mr. Gerald Flurry as he addresses all of the Key of David viewers and subscribers that make their way to these campaigns. The idea of hosting the public appearance campaigns was original with Herbert Armstrong. He had a three-leg approach to teaching the gospel, to warning this world, to helping God expand the church. Obviously, God calls, but it's a matter of really pressing people to act on what's set before them. He used television broadcasting with the World Tomorrow program. He used print media, the Plain Truth magazine in particular, but other periodicals, obviously dozens and dozens of other books, a correspondence course, all of this effort to get us to respond when God calls us. Now, we're consistently trying to follow that direction, that template, you might say. We too have broadcasts. We too have extensive editorial efforts. We have internet-based messages that go out there. And we also have these campaigns. I think last year, over 20 different campaigns in 5 or 6 different nations. That's really impressive to see where God is directing those resources. Speaking of resources, I might have mentioned this already on a Trump a Daily radio program, but December 2019 marked our strongest month ever for general donations to the church. The year finished off quite strong, and this year's off to a great start. I wanted to thank all of those who have been involved in raising funds for the church for our special programs. We've already deposited over $115,000 this year from congregational fundraising. That's really, by the time you get to the end of the year with all the fundraising, typically one or even two payments for the aircraft are made as a result of all of you coming together to work for these fundraisers. Your sacrifice of time, your efforts in selling fruit or having garage sales, some work concession stands or sell flowers, however you earn the money, however you volunteer to serve this work has been super helpful. So a big thank you to you for your sacrifice, for your efforts to promote these special projects of the work. Overall, the income, as I said, last year finished quite strong. It was our second highest total ever. It was just a few percentage points behind 2018, and that can all be explained by some very nice estate donations we received in 2018. This year, already, two of our regional offices are working on some large estates. And again, that should be something that allows us to supplement some of our special projects. We use estate money. We use money received in our regional offices to support summer educational programs, not only in the United States, but Philippines, Australia, sometimes even in Britain. We provide financial assistance to some of our international students. Of course, we support programs in Israel. All of this comes together. And it's all blessed by the work and the offerings and the sacrifices that all of you make. Well, there is a lot happening in the news. I'll move on to that. I do like to try to inform you about what's going on within the work. And as we look at the news, of course, there's just an abundance of events that we have to keep our eyes on. I think if we would step back 10 years and look at the pace of world events, we'd think that they were reasonably active. But if you could look at today, from just a slightly stepped back perspective, it is stunning what we're seeing in the headlines, what's taking place in the world around us. There are major changes in the Israelitish nations. There's upheaval in the prophetically important nations of Europe. I think Mr. Seymour, I think it was just earlier this week, was bringing out, though, the other power blocks, like the King of the South or the Kings of the East. Well, they seem ready to go. Israeli elections, I believe, are just 10 days away. In the United States, caucuses, primaries are taking place, campaigning, and we're probably just 8 or 9 months away now from the general election. That's really pretty impressive. How do you make sense of all of this? I know I rely on this program. I rely on the Trumpet magazine, on the Trumpet Brief, the Trumpet Hour, the Key of David program, all the other programming on KPCG. We need help We need the motivation and the push from God to really devote our time and energy to the subjects and the activities that He wants us focused on. Last night, if you subscribe to the Trumpet Brief, you got a really exciting announcement that I'd like to quote from that Trumpet Brief. It was written by Mr. Stephen Fleury. And again, he submitted this as he's out on a campaign over in Ireland. He says, "Are you really hearing the trumpet message? If you follow the trumpet, you are aware that many dire trends and events threaten this planet. You see the emergence of extreme ideologies and political views in Europe, and how this is creating an appetite for radical new leadership. You see radical Islam destabilizing the Middle East. You see Russia and China threatening the West. You see the rise of deadly radical left in America, Britain, and the Jewish state. We see, this is my words now, you see the fake news. You talk about massive election interference. It's just happening everywhere in the world. Deceit. It's very difficult to understand the truth, to know what's really taking place, because there's just so much deception, so much effort to influence minds. Getting back to the Trumpet Brief, Mr. Fleury says, "You are reading about how these enormous, complex, and fateful events will affect your life, and you're reading passages from the Bible that show that these events were prophesied thousands of years in advance. Hundreds of thousands of people in more than 130 countries read the trumpet, but few act on it." Again, getting back to my words here, this is what the last half of today's program will address. It's a consistent message from the last year. We must act on what God is teaching us. Mr. Stephen Fleury says, "Maybe this includes you. Maybe you follow our message. Maybe you agree with it. But do you really understand the trumpet's message? There's something more you need to do. You need to take the next step. You need to watch a live trumpet lecture. I will present a special live video broadcast from Edstone, United Kingdom, on March 1st to trumpet subscribers around the world." That's just, what, about a week, week and a half away. He gives the times. I won't get into all that. Hopefully you subscribe to the Trumpet Brief. You could go to our website, thetrumpet.com, to learn more details about this, to register for the event. We want you to come listen. And it's different than just a regular radio broadcast you'd hear or an article you might read. There is a call to action. And it's something that we really encourage you to respond to. This pack, this online pack, might be your only opportunity to hear one of these events. At least they might not come personally to your town. So make sure you connect. Make sure you're acting on what God wants us to do. As Mr. Stephen Fleury said, and as longtime listeners to Mr. Armstrong and to our work, you're hearing headlines in the news that were prophesied by God through His church years, if not decades ago. Those headlines are in the news today. It is time to step back and to really focus on our message, the message of the trumpet, the key of David, KPCG programming, so you know what to expect. Come to a campaign. God is giving us opportunity to grow. Well, I have just a few headlines of interest before we take a short break. All of this is related to the coronavirus outbreak. It's personally something of interest to me. Just, I think it's fascinating to see how this spreads. Since it was first reported by the World Health Organization on December 31st, 2019, it's just been around in the news for, say, about 8 or 9 weeks. There's been over 76,000 confirmed cases as of this morning. I saw headlines this morning about the spread through Chinese prisons. South Korea is experiencing a spike at what they've identified as one of a cult camps. Israel confirmed their case today from somebody that was on a cruise ship. As of this morning, more than 2,200 people have died. The mortality rate for this particular virus is 2.3%, or at least that's statistically what they're showing right now. It's much fewer deaths, or it's a lower mortality rate than some of the other viruses of the past, like SARS or MERS. But still, it has the world's attention. There are all kinds of headlines. And again, some of it is probably propaganda. Some of it probably is exaggerated and fake news. But there's no doubt that this is a serious, serious problem. And I think what strikes me is how quickly something like this can spread, how quickly your life can change. If this did have a higher mortality rate, this would be a pretty frightening virus outbreak. And again, it still is. I'm not saying that it doesn't. On I think it's CNBC on their website, they just kind of keep a running headline of what's taking place. It's really kind of like minute-by-minute updates. This is from yesterday's report. They said the International Monetary Fund says it's too early for an accurate figure on the impact on global growth. But what they're saying is that the alarm bells are starting to sound. They're adjusting all of their economic forecasts downward as a result of this virus. It's not only life-threatening, it's not only something that could make you sick, but it will affect the global economy. A little bit earlier in the day, it said the S&P Global says Chinese banks could see bad loans double. So it's going to affect the loans. And if you recall from the economic crises that we've faced around the world over even just the last decade or two, a lot of those triggered by bad loans. This virus could have an impact on that. 3 minutes earlier, the headline was Kuwait Airlines suspends flights to Iran amid fears of the coronavirus outbreak. 40 minutes before that, they say coronavirus cases outside China remain low, but the World Health Organization chief warns, quote, that may not stay the same for long. Pretty frightful headlines. That particular story says World Health officials said the new coronavirus has not yet spread widely around the world, but emphasized that the virus could break out globally at any time. 30 minutes before that, again, this is all just yesterday afternoon, Ukrainians clash with police to block evacuees from China. Nobody wants to take in those that are infected, and for good reason, because it's clearly very contagious. I saw a headline this morning that in Gaza, there's protests and misunderstandings about who has the virus. The same thing happened in Japan, I believe, in the last day or two, where there is public violence because somebody might cough not wearing a mask, or somebody might do something that others perceive as threatening and very well could be, again, because this virus seems to be so virulent. At 1:28 yesterday afternoon, global air travel demand set to decline. They said global air travel demand is set to decline for the first time since 2009. 11 years of growth, 11 years of expanding. If you've flown recently, you know how busy the airports are. Selfishly, I'd like to see a little decline, so it's not quite as busy. But listen to this and think of this impact on China. This article says the outbreak will cost Chinese airlines $12.8 billion in revenue and nearly $29 billion for carriers in the Asia-Pacific region. Again, you have the expense of handling and working with the virus. You have downturn in economic activity. You have people that are uncertain and scared. It's really kind of building towards something that could explode. Now, we know there's other prophecies that indicate there's other problems, but as you study Bible prophecy, you see it's a confluence of a lot of different activities. A lot of different plagues and war and drama and lying and murder. All of it seems to be coming to a head. 1 p.m. yesterday, it was reported that the FBI has ordered $40,000 in hand sanitizer and face masks. They're saying they're just preparing just in case the coronavirus becomes a pandemic in the United States. 2 hours before that, the cruise lines are canceling their cruises. I don't know if anybody would want to take a cruise these days with the prospect of being quarantined on one of those ships. There's probably a fine activity for 3 or 4 days that you plan on, but if you're stuck there for 2 or 3 more weeks, different story. Obviously, as I said, it impacts the economy, the energy and oil industry. I see I'm kind of running low on time here. This is just a quick headline from Reuters. This was from, I think, about 3 days ago. U.S. oil industry expected to cut spending by 10 to 15%, and they expect to restructure. It was a report that was given by the Dallas Federal Reserve, And basically, same thing. They're seeing a decrease in demand for oil. And they're seeing the economic impact. Again, I think it's been, I think it says somewhere in here. I don't see it. Anyway, it's been years since there's, okay, here it is. It says this forecasts that the virus could impact reduced demand by about 400,000 barrels in the first quarter, the first decline since the Great Recession. Think about what these headlines portend for the future. Well, we will take a break now, and when we come back, I'll have a two-part short segment, kind of like a Bible study. So stick around.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The relatively new science of archaeology, the digging up and study of the material remains of man's past, has confirmed without question the historical accuracy of the Bible. Solid, documented evidence, apart from the Bible, confirms events and persons that at one time were known to us only from Scripture. The Bible is real, and you need to pay attention to it. Call now and request your free copy of The Authority of the Bible. This lesson, which comes from the Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course, blows the dust off your Bible. You will learn how to mine the treasures buried in the greatest book on earth. You can discover its secrets and enrich your life today. For more information, please visit thetrumpet.com. Trumpet Daily.
Thank you for listening to the program. I recently traveled to the state of Florida. We were looking at some potential properties or locations to conduct the Feast of Tabernacles a few years down the road. And it really a very promising trip, very beautiful resort-like locations. One of the places we visited was Panama City Beach. And if you recall, just in 2018, that area was ravaged by a Category 5 hurricane. And you can still see the effects of that in parts of the town today. The particular resort we were considering, they suffered a lot of damage, and they had a good insurance policy. And so a lot of it's been rebuilt. It was a powerful storm, though. And just on one of their golf courses, 2,200 trees were knocked down or killed by this storm. And again, as you go a little further away from the resort, the devastation was just amazing. I was talking to the sales manager there, and they said that as the storm was approaching, it looked like it was going to go further east. It was only a Category 1, not the most threatening storm. Still, nobody wants to see a hurricane coming, but the direction changed and it strengthened, and it hit the area as a Cat 5, Category 5 hurricane. And again, just talking with this individual, I couldn't help but to think how quickly things can change. A beautiful sight, beautiful trees, lush environment, resort-like atmosphere, all of a sudden laid waste. They're also bracing industry-wide for a downturn in the economy. I think it's interesting to look at different industries and how they can forecast activity in their particular sector. And anyway, it was just kind of interesting to me is there's that vision that, okay, things look great now, but just a couple years down the road, we're anticipating some change. I was struck on this trip by some of the observations I made. I'd like to just share some of those with you and bear with me. It's a personal story, but I think it all ties together with what we've been hearing on this program, not only today, but over the last year. On this travel, I was just, again, kind of overwhelmed by the abundance of smart devices. Nothing new. You've heard a lot of talk about it. There's jokes about it. And I'll get to the reason why I was a little bit more attuned to this in just a moment. But young people, older people, several people that were flying next to me. It had multiple devices. It wasn't just one smartphone. It was a smartphone and like an iPad or something. Their children sitting next to them, also one device, maybe two. And I just thought, wow, that's if you just stop and look around, it's pretty amazing. Very little interaction with other people, which I kind of like. I'm not one that likes to just engage in conversation with strangers while flying. So to me, there's some benefit of everybody being plugged into their smart devices. But it's not just interacting with strangers that's limited, even with families. Everyone's just plugged in. Games, music, movies. I seem to notice that there just appear to be a lot of moms and daughters traveling together. That oven by itself is not bad, but I was just thinking about how the families are not together. And this was probably more pronounced because one of the locations I flew into was Jacksonville, and it was the weekend of the Daytona 500 race. And so, as you'd expect, there were more men traveling down there to enjoy the race and coming back. And I understand that, where maybe the moms and the children wouldn't be as excited about a NASCAR event. But it just really stood out that there were groups of men selfishly doing what they wanted to do. And then there were the moms and the daughters that were off kind of doing their own thing. And then even within that, you have the lack of interaction, just the personal staying plugged in. I couldn't help but to think about what those men were doing. Obviously, you know, watching the race, but away from families. You know, hopefully not getting into too much else, but it just was really depressing in so many ways. And yet that's just the way this world is. I think if you were to explain that to somebody that doesn't listen to this message, they'd say, well, it's a great thing. Yeah, you could go enjoy the entertainment of a NASCAR race. And the wives, well, they can go take their daughters and go do something else. And it just seems so common and so easy to accept. And yet, if you think about it more deeply, it's really divisive. It does separate families. It does lead to more selfishness. It leads to a lifestyle that in a lot of ways, perhaps, we really should try to avoid. I kept thinking about this particular passage in Revelation 18 and verse 4. It says, I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people. God's talking to his people. The people he's talking to, come out of her, that you be not partakers of her sins, and that you receive not of her plagues. There's a lot packed into that verse. It's a warning from God. We've got to separate ourselves from what's common today, what's the accepted thing. Don't partake of those sins, because those sins will be punished. God will visit those sins, or he will require the penalty to be paid. And God says, I don't want you to have to go through that. Some of those draws from the world, some of the worldliness that's out there is pretty easy to separate ourselves from. Some of it a little more challenging. Get out of this world. Get out of its ways. Get out of its habits, its tendencies, the things that are just so easily accepted. Come out of idol worship. Now, yeah, I say something like that, and perhaps somebody thinks of a little idol or a little figurine, and that obviously could be the case. But think more deeply. Idol worship, this putting something before God, maybe a smart device, maybe personal pleasure like NASCAR, maybe, you know, whatever it could be. God says, you come out of that idol worship. Come away from those addictions. They're leading to plagues. They're causing problems. Just walking through the airport, looking at people, was quite an experience, especially in light of what I was thinking about here. And not only that, as you walk through the airport, a lot of people wear it's not overwhelming, but it's not uncommon at all to see people wearing the medical masks. They're glued to their technology. There's no interaction. So it kind of begs the question, just how different should we be and why? Do you have the strength to leave this world, its passions, its idols? I think of, you could think of a dozen different Bible examples. You think of Lot's wife. Destruction was coming. They're told, like, the end is coming. You got to get out of town. You're being dragged out. And still, with that understanding, the temptation to look back, to yearn for what you left behind, it didn't end well for her. I was thinking about the example of Abram. It's kind of just the opposite. He was a wealthy, successful man. He was in the midst of a vibrant society, you could say. But it stood out to God prior to him being called that he had the potentialities of obedience and leadership. This was before he had proven himself to God. God saw within this individual, well, this guy might obey. He looks like he's likely to obey. And he exhibits some great qualities of leadership. From Mystery of the Ages, Mr. Armstrong said, Abram, as he was originally named, was not seeking God. But God chose to call and test Abram. God was calling him because he had seen in this man the potentialities of obedience to God and of leadership. God was calling him to be prepared for special service and ultimately a high position in the kingdom of God, the upcoming world tomorrow. End of quote. Is God calling you? Is God calling me? Is he working with us? How are we responding? I think this is a really interesting quote from Mystery of the Ages because it identifies to us what God is looking for. He sees the potential in us to obey, the potential to become a leader, to be an example. But we have to separate ourselves from this world. God called Abram out of that society. He says, leave that behind and follow me. Do what I say. Not what you think is best, not what society around you is doing. Do we have the character to follow Abram, who later became Abraham? Do we have the quality of character to follow that example? God does see potentialities of obedience and leadership in us. If you listen to the message on this station, if you read the Trumpet magazine, if you watch The Key of David, or perhaps you go to a campaign, that's a good sign that God sees something in you that he wants to develop. God needs us to act on that. Those potentialities, they need to be developed. God has to build character in our lives, and part of that process is separating ourselves from the world and its ways. God doesn't dwell with sin. God doesn't accept that. He separates. You have to balance, of course, what Christ prayed about. John 17, Christ did not ask the Father to remove us physically from the world, to pull us physically out of society, but he did pray for our protection. You see, we have to be in an environment where we choose life, where we choose to obey. What does God see when he looks down at an airport in Florida, when he looks down at a society? Well, Psalm 14, I'll read to you two verses here. Psalm 14, verses 2 through 3, it says, the Eternal looked down from heaven upon the children of men to see if there were any that did understand and seek God. He's looking for people to call. He's looking for people that will actively seek him. The psalm continues, they are all gone aside. They are altogether become filthy. There is none that does good. No, not one. That's a broad assessment of what you see in this world. Nobody's really that interested in pursuing God, pursuing understanding. So as I people watched as I was traveling, I couldn't get past how caught up people were in themselves, in their devices, how impersonal they were, the heads down, swiping their thumbs, doing all kinds of gyrations on their devices. And it's interesting to just watch human behavior, young or old. It was interesting how intuitive to the carnal human mind it is to use your thumb swiping across the screen and clicking and typing. If you just step back and look at it, somebody recently likened a smart device to like sitting in front of a slot machine, flashing lights, noises, pictures, just distracting, engaging to the human mind. Carnal nature just really gets drawn into that. Now, there's more to this story that I want to share with you. I recently dumbed down my smartphone to a dumb phone. It's a flip phone, as we've kind of joked, it's almost embarrassing to take a call. In fact, I did receive a call on it while on a site visit, and just the ringtone. And then when I pulled it out of my pocket, the guide there said, "What is that?" It was my phone, but it's a dumb phone. It doesn't have easy access. In fact, it has no access to email. Very limited access to entertainment, the internet. You can't play games on it. I suppose you could play music on it somehow. And it's been quite an adjustment. And I'm actually finding it quite rewarding. It's interesting, though, to talk to other people about this. They say, "Well, I can't do without this. I can't do without that." And if you just step back sometimes and listen to what you're advocating for, "Well, I can't do without this feature." And it just sounds kind of ridiculous. I mean, you can talk yourself into it, but it's not really a need. Now, getting back to my experience, again, I'm not holding myself up as an example. I'm struggling with this just the same. And what was interesting to me is that I'm not really much of a casual reader. I read a lot with my job. But on these past three trips I've taken over the last month, I've read more church literature just outside of my personal Bible study. And I've read a couple different quality books in just the last few weeks. For me, I've read through several hundred pages, which is miraculous. Again, for me. For you, it's probably not that big a deal. I can't tell you the last time I got through several hundred pages of books. I got through three different church books. Again, I study like you do with a Bible open and marking my books and really being very detailed. But there's also, I think, a certain benefit to just reading through a booklet that you've already studied from cover to cover to just get the whole message there. I've read through a couple secular books, again, unthinkable in the past, but entirely accessible without the distraction of smartphones. This got me thinking about the value of coming out of some of the common distractions that this world has to offer. Again, not that a smartphone is bad of and by itself, but it's the distractions from the training God wants to give us and the benefit of coming out of her can be pretty spectacular. I had to make two different trips to Florida over a period of about 5 days, and those trips were separated by a Sabbath that I kept here at headquarters. And Trumpet Hour host Joel Hilliker gave a terrific message about meditation, the art of godly thinking, just deeply thinking. And it was awesome because I had already experienced the separation from my device, you could say, while in travel just a couple days before. But then I added on this dimension of thinking, meditating. The message was personally corrective to me, the sermon message that was given, but so beneficial. When was the last time you devoted effort and time to meditation? Probably for most of you listening, this is it's a common practice, but it's likely an area where all of us can grow. It does take effort to concentrate, to think deeply. And I do hope that all of us exercise this spiritual tool. It helps prepare us for our future. Looking back on the trip, I can honestly say that I feel sorry for the other travelers, whom I used to be very much like. But those other travelers that missed out on hours of engaging, thought-provoking, reading, writing, perhaps, just thinking and focus, give it a try. Try to separate yourself from the distractions. In the last program that Mr. Stephen Fleury gave, I think just a couple days ago on Wednesday, he discussed faith, believing God, trusting God, being motivated to act on what God promises. We have to be strong in faith We don't want to stagger at the promises of God. Abraham did not stagger at God's promises. But as Mr. Stephen Fleury pointed out on his program on Wednesday, Abraham had to keep growing. He did make mistakes. He wasn't perfect, but he kept growing. And God was building the faith of Christ in Abraham. Abraham became the father of the faithful. Mr. Stephen Fleury quoted from one of our booklets, What is Faith? That booklet was authored by Herbert W. Armstrong years and years ago. It's a tiny booklet. It's a quick, short read. And it's also a booklet that you need to deeply study with your Bible. It's a must, I believe, in preparing for the Passover. Now, you can request a copy of this booklet if you don't have it by sending an email to td@kpcg.fm. You can download a copy from our website, thetrumpet.com. You go to the library tab, you can get a PDF. You can request a copy through the mail. You can even get an audio copy, an audiobook version of What is Faith? We do offer a lot of our literature as audio booklets. Kind of talking us away from smart devices, and yet at the same time, there is a place to listen to things. This is an area that you could pray about for the church. We need more readers. We have a lot of output to keep up with. And so we're trying to make this warning message, this educational message, as accessible as possible. Well, we'll consider the subject of faith from a slightly different angle after we come back from a short break here. I want to prove to you that without faith in God, we, like other human beings, are going to find ourselves in a terrible, terrible predicament in the immediate future. So stick with us for the last part of this program. We'll come right back after a short break.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Untold thousands of professing Christian ministers have, over the centuries, preached Christ. They have professed to be his ministers, to represent him. They have said Jesus of Nazareth is the Christ, but they have withheld Christ's gospel. Thus, the vast majority of people on earth have been deceived by false gospels. The incredible human potential reveals how men were deceived about the truth of the gospel, and it makes plain what the good news of the true gospel really is. The true gospel of God's coming kingdom is directly concerned with world conditions as they are, with human nature, its source and origin, with world evils, suffering, unhappiness, with world peace. It's concerned with government, with the reason present human governments fail to be the benefactors of their peoples they are supposed to be. This all-important subject is thoroughly explained in Herbert Armstrong's book, The Incredible Human Potential. Request The Incredible Human Potential today. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
One of the books that I started to read on this trip, one of the secular books, was entitled Raven Rock, and it was advertised in a news article that I was reading not too long ago. And this book is probably not super appealing to a lot of people. There's a lot of detail. You could argue maybe too much detail. But it basically tells the story of how America had to mature as a nation, as a government, during the nuclear weapons generation. Specifically, it's about a fascinating political doctrine, the continuity of government, or COG. And in the introduction to this book, let me just read to you a quote or two. It says, the terrorist attacks of September 11th, 2001, and the subsequent anthrax attack on the U.S. Congress restarted a focus on continuity of government planning that continues to this day. Today, this secret world still exists just beneath the surface of our country. In many ways, it's actually more expansive, powerful and capable today than it ever was during the 20th century. It's staffed 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. A little bit further down, just to give you an example of what this entails, says today the Postal Service does not prepare to register dead from a nuclear strike, nor do its mail trucks stand ready to be converted into emergency casualty carriers, but it is the designed or designated distributor of vaccines should a biological attack or health pandemic like smallpox or Ebola occur. Again, just thinking of coronavirus, not as deadly as some of those other potential plagues, but the government has plans in place to help try to manage, to mitigate the impact of a pandemic. This article continues, or this book says, and today, every day, there are still military aides who walk just steps behind the president and vice president, toting a heavy black briefcase filled with all the instructions necessary to end the world as we know it. Until that happens, of course, we'll never know if any of the plans outlined on the following pages of this book will ever have worked, but as readers will see, it seems unlikely. The book details all the extensive plans of this nation, how to cope with a nuclear war. And the chilling words at the end of the introduction, and I haven't finished the book yet, is basically they know their plans will not work. In Matthew chapter 24, there is a prophecy, the Olivet prophecy, that we quote often. And Mr. Armstrong used the Bible to prove that nuclear World War III is certain to happen. Matthew 24, verse 21 says, "For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. And except, or unless those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved or saved alive. But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened." The message is clear. Without God's direct and supernatural intervention, mankind will not survive this nuclear exchange. Down about 10 verses, verse 32, it says, "Now learn a parable of the fig tree. When his branch is yet tender and puts forth leaves, you know that summer is near. So likewise you, when you shall see all of these things, know that it is near, even at the doors." God says you better be aware of the conditions of this world that you're living in. It should change the way we conduct our lives. This is what Peter teaches us. It's a pretty remarkable time that we live in. On Wednesday this week, Mr. Steve Fleury discussed the subject of faith as he teaches it to the students of the doctrines class taught here at the college. And he built a radio program and likely his class around what it says in Luke 18, verse 8. Just to paraphrase that, it says, "When Christ returns, will he find faith on the earth?" We are living in a faithless generation, as discussed by Mr. Armstrong. Just prior to his return, just like Psalm 14 points out, God looks down and he sees no hope, no trust in man. And frankly, that's what this book is really all about. It's about man's futile attempt to preserve his life, his government. The book makes it pretty plain that after spending billions and likely trillions of dollars, after engaging brilliant minds and engineers to work for decades with hundreds, if not thousands, of holes, caves dug into mountainsides, none of it is going to work. That's the brutal lesson God needs mankind to learn, that only God can save. Only God can give hope, and only God can preserve. Yes, God does see potentialities in all of us to obey and to lead by example. That's part of our creation. He sees within us the potential to resist Satan and to fulfill a very special role in the coming world tomorrow. But today, we must learn to obey, to grow in godly character. Today, we need to learn to separate ourselves from the distractions and the sins of this world. Today, we need to act on the message that we're listening to, that we're studying. We are saved by faith. It's a quality or a characteristic that comes from God, but it has to grow in us. It has to be strengthened in us. It's a foundational doctrine of the church, as was pointed out. You should go back and listen to that program again. You can get the podcast. You can go to our website. It's the February 19th program. It's entitled, When Christ Returns, Will He Find Faith? A great, great message for us. Going back to this book, Raven Rock, it starts with the Harry Truman presidency. And actually, it starts with him being vice president. And he received a call from First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt. Harry Truman, as at least represented in this book, was pretty unassuming, kind of minding his own business. But life changed with this phone call, as Eleanor Roosevelt explained to Mr. Truman that her husband had just died. The book says, it's quoting Mr. Truman, "Is there anything I can do for you?" He said that after some time as he struggled to wrap his mind around the announcement. Eleanor countered quickly, "Is there anything we can do for you? For you are the one in trouble now." That was right after her husband's death. And I think it really punctuates the seriousness of the times. What I really like about this book is how it takes you into some of these moments of history and how this first lady told the soon-to-be sworn-in president that you are about to experience a massive change in your life just with a phone call. It was April 12th, 1945, and he was now president. Less than 4 months later, he would order an American B-29 bomber to drop the world's first atomic bomb on Hiroshima, Japan. He didn't even know the weapon existed. So few people knew about this super weapon that was being developed. There were questions, philosophies about the destructive capacity, the political ramifications, and ultimately there was discussion about what would undoubtedly lead to an arms race. And yet all of this was prophesied, as was brought out in that trumpet brief. There was a time set when, for the first time in human history, that humans would have the capacity to end all life on this planet. It was a sign that Christ's return was imminent. Going back to this book, it says, in the weeks following the war's end, Truman announced a redesign of the presidential flag, the first since the Wilson years. Chief among the changes was the shifting of the eagle's head away from the arrows of war, instead toward the olive branch of peace, reflecting the nation's desire for a universal peace. It was a hopeful gesture, but Truman understood reality as well. Buried in the midst of his post-Potsdam radio report, he gave an ominous warning, quote, "No one can foresee what another world war would mean to our own cities and our own people. What we are doing to Japan now, even with the new atomic bomb, is only a small fraction of what would happen to the world in a third world war." Really scary warnings. I've run myself out of time. I encourage you to think about this subject. Essentially, what the book does is it traces the presidency and the decisions they had to make. It became quite apparent that Washington, D.C. was a terrible design. It was fine before there were nuclear weapons, but now within the tight confines of the city of Washington, D.C. lay the entire seat of government. All three branches, the Pentagon, all the military leadership, the national treasure that was there, and of course, all of the other civilians. These new weapons could decapitate the nation in one frightful moment. And as the book carries on from successive presidencies leading up to today, that there was just this arms race that makes weapons more destructive. They make them faster, so there's less time to prepare or react. And the premise of this whole book is the government trying to develop plans to protect the government, to allow it to continue with its operations, the continuity of government. It's a really hopeless story in this book about digging holes in the ground, burying yourself under rocks. It actually follows Bible prophecy. You should recognize some of these phrases or terms where men hide in caves and rocks and they just beg for the mountains to collapse on them, because what's outside of that cave is so much worse. God calls us to come out of this world. This is what God has prophesied is coming. We're not trying to scare you. God's not trying to scare you into obedience. God wants you to make the right choice, to choose to learn obedience, to choose to learn to lead. There is no hope in this world. There's no hope in a cave. The government won't continue. President Eisenhower said, look, if there is nuclear war, there isn't going to be a democracy in any government in the world afterward. It's going to be dictatorship, because that's what's going to be required to survive. In the introduction to the United States and Britain in Prophecy, Mr. Armstrong said, men today are tampering with forces of nature. They lack the prudence, knowledge, and ability and wisdom to control. That's the state of this world. We really need to step back, to declutter our lives, to remove ourselves from some of the technology, the devices, the distractions of this world. Just 1 week of reading, thinking, and being inspired by what God says, what he's looking for. He wants us to obey and learn to lead. God is looking for us to respond to our calling, to develop character, to come out of this world and to build faith in his promises for a peaceful, abundant, awe-inspiring, wonderful world tomorrow. May God speed that day. Thank you for listening.